Welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. An ever-growing number of people are coming to the realization that perhaps celestial beings have been influencing the history of this planet since there was a history of this planet, and in my humble opinion, one individual who may know more about that than just about anyone else is our guest of honor every broadcast. It's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
I trust things are well in Hawaii this week.
Yeah, things are pretty good. A little bit windy. Been windy for a while.
Now, in the Artist First Studios, it has been record-breaking temperatures. Broke another record yesterday. Artist First is in northeastern Ohio, folks. We're not that far from the north coast of the United States. And it was 92 degrees here yesterday, and which would have been Memorial Day 2012, which was what, May 28th. 92-degree heat the last three or four days in the end of May. They've never seen temperatures like this before. Do you think it has anything to do with the global warming or climate change? What do you think, Michael?
Well, yeah, well, it could be. It seems about moving around. There's places that are very cold and very, and like you say, places that are very hot. So it seems that things are, you know, on the at the same time. You can find places that are very hot and some places that are very cold, breaking cold records for cold, too. So the extremes in temperature are the keys that tell me that there is a lot of other forces that make, you know, what would normally be a more mild weather pattern, more normal weather pattern prevail, but right now we've seen extremes, both cold and hot.
Well, I don't want to get involved in the cold climate change debate. Obviously, in my book, there's ridiculous evidence. How am I saying? I'm being facetious. I'm saying there's, or sarcastic perhaps, there's overwhelming evidence that the climate is changing. I think the only real debate left is how much is man contributing to that climate change. We know that the Earth has gone through numerous climate changes over its long history. Although before we move on to the Tonight Show, I do want to point out, I heard a statistic that at least in North America, the 10 warmest summers recorded were like the last, out of the last 12 years. We're in the last 12 years. Something like that. So I think that's close to, maybe it was 11 out of the last 13 years have been record-setting years. At any rate, okay, well, this program is about celestial beings, whether or not Earth is being influenced by intelligences off-planet, whether we're alone in the universe, and if you have questions or comments, send them to us at dj@artistfirst.com. I saw a couple emails when I got in. I guess there's a problem with last week's show. Some of you guys are having trouble downloading it. We'll have that fixed for you tonight. Well, Michael, where do you want to start tonight?
Well, you know, there's a lot we could start with, but one of the interesting things about being with these celestial beings is they're material, but I got to meet them in all phases, you know, basically, you know, dimensionally, they're different dimensionally. We know, you know, in our everyday lives, we've heard of, you know, being a physical, a mortal being. And then, of course, you know, with the, you know, our different experiential ways of explaining spirits. We know about the spiritual realm, you know, and some of these psychic phenomena or paranormal phenomena. And there's the in-between. And the in-between is one of the interesting things because that has also been demonstrated. It's called Maranchia. It's sort of the bridgeway between, and our soul lies in that area. And it's very interesting to see that it's been demonstrated by many people throughout the planet and been looked at somewhat as being somewhat, you know, the primitive. But the primitives were demonstrating it because it was demonstrated to them, and they had practiced it because it was a way of realizing that their physical selves was, were when alive, was much more real, much more I guess dimensionally real. And these were demonstrated in things like fire walking, and doing some other extreme physical demonstrations. Some of them were able to walk on razors, sharp things, swallow things that are extremely sharp. They would normally tear up flesh, but or burn flesh severely. And these are classified as the demonstration of the reality that living beings, and demonstrated by as a human being, is able to transcend the normal physical realm and move into the what is called the Marantxa realm, one in which translates or is straddling both the material physical and the spiritual ethereal realm, and having that demonstrated in those kinds of ways. You know, people in Hawaii have decided to leave their footprints literally in red-hot lava. You can go and look at it and see places where people have walked across red-hot lava. Just to get close to that place, you'll be burned pretty severely. But to walk across it is tremendous. And these things were demonstrated, and I also practiced it and found it at a level, not walking across red-hot lava, but across, you know, red-hot stuff and burning and fire, things like that. And it was quite remarkable because you cannot really accomplish that, because at the same time you can be cooking a hot dog and be standing there while, I mean, kind of moving around, but actually not getting burnt. And what was, to me, tremendous in doing that was that how my feet, which had literally been touching red-hot coals, felt ice cold to the touch. Now this took a sort of state of translation. Now this was after I had already been with the Celestials, but they wanted me to understand these phenomena and that we can experience it, and we need to learn that we are much more than just material mortal beings, that we have a transition ahead of us that will transcend the mortal material realm into a higher realm. And sometimes you gotta look at some of these primitives and say, what are they doing and why are they demonstrating it, and why was it taught to them?
You know, I wanted to remind our listeners, I watched a NOVA program a number of years ago where they took, I believe they were Buddhist monks in Tibet, and as an exercise once a year, they go up into the Himalayan mountains where it's, you know, snow-covered, and they undress down to basically what would be a gym shorts, and then they take T-shirts, basically what are, you know, amounts of T-shirts. They soak the T-shirts in water just to make this more exciting. Then they put on soaking wet, cold T-shirts, and they stay on the mountain the entire night. Now, you and I would survive a couple of hours, and we would die of hypothermia. All these people survive every single time. It's almost superhuman. They can, you know, how come their skin doesn't freeze? How come your skin didn't burn when it touched? You know, it's just mind-bending, and yet this happens, and it doesn't. It's not part of our understanding. We don't know. We look at it, and we go, "Daggone it! What's going on here?"
That's exactly what it is. Daggone it! What's going on here? And that's the explanation that we can actually function in that realm, which is sort of between the physical and the spiritual, and do things like that. And of course, the interesting things about those monks, they literally had what appears to be steam coming off the wet towels on their back.
Well, yeah, and you know, there are things like, when you see someone lay on a bed of nails, well, there's, okay, if you never see anyone lay on a bed of six nails, you see him lay on a bed of 6,000 nails, because the number of nail heads or points, if it's in the thousands, can disperse the weight among them so that none of them pierces the skin. I mean, it's not really beyond physical. It's just more of a parlor trick than it is something supernatural. Now, how do you walk on coals? How do you stay on a mountain all night long in sub-freezing weathers in just gym shorts? I'm not, no shoes, no socks, people, nothing but a wet T-shirt. Well, that's a wet T-shirt contest I'd like to see. That's the ultimate wet T-shirt contest. But listen, Tony Kegg, company president, is in the studio with me. He just finished his shift, and he's going to head out of here. And he had a question he'd like to ask you before he departs. So I'm going to turn the mic over briefly to Tony. Here you go.
Hey, Michael, Tony Kegg.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, love your shows, of course, and popular around the world, available free on demand all the time. We love the broadcast, Michael. Thank you. The question that I have for you centers around the ancients that practiced meditation, the ability to remove themselves from their bodies, are going into the realm of the spiritual, the area of the celestials. They're able to, of course, come to our level as well as other worlds and levels. When we do this, when we meditate, when we come in tune or seek out higher power, spiritual power from God, are we attempting to commune with the celestials in that fashion?
Yes, we actually do take a state in some of their realm. Although in one occasion of my personal occasion, I was considered kind of like violating my abode. I had been basically out of body, hovering over the city of Honolulu on Oahu, the island of Oahu, Hawaii. And I was just noticing all the lights and, you know, as if taking an aerial view, but I was having a lot of fun that way, looking around. And then I interceded someone intercepted me, actually. And it was one of my personal guardians who basically almost felt like I was a naughty child. I was taken back, and he said, "Get back where you belong." And I said, "Okay." And bam, I was back in my body real quick. But the entire, I guess, trip, you might say, and it wasn't a psychedelic trip. It was actually one in which I had purposefully meditated to attain. And once attaining it, then I got, as I say, intercepted. I at the time already had a personal guardian, and he told me to get back, and I did, and I remembered every bit of it, and it's real, and yet I was still very connected to my body, and it was something that he did not really approve of. So I would say, yeah, we may, you know, come to point of working with them, but I believe a tremendous amount of our lives must be lived here in the body, but with a higher estate or a higher mind, one in which, you know, goes beyond our level of living here and realizes our true estate is beyond here, and that really helps change the way we live and causes us to have, you know, much greater dimension in our values and our dreams.
Michael, would it be comparable to mediums or others who can communicate with the deceased?
Very close. Yeah, it's very close because some of the deceased haven't taken another abode. They've sort of like come to a point of, you know, even at that time when I was out of body, I did notice that there were confused others there who were not like me. I mean, I knew what I purposely was doing, and I saw these other confused ones, but I couldn't communicate with them. And I sent it up higher and higher and higher in a way as I became high in that estate, looking down at the city. I was just admiring its physical lights, the lights of the city. That's when I was intercepted. But I won't forget about those others that I couldn't communicate with. They looked like they were lost. And I believe that's what they were. They were lost.
There is a point of no return. and perhaps a choice.
I think so. And definitely our choice is the first thing. It's the primary. And if we don't make that choice to seek essentially the first source and center, God, to seek that, then it's very hard to navigate to any direction, any direction from where you're going. That's primary.
The need for multi-dimensional growth experience is not unique to the human condition.
Actually,
the desire to transcend, to become more or better or evolved. Spiritually.
It's galactic in terms of not just the human race here on Earth, but indeed many of the other celestial beings, some of whom were material, were actually quite on that pathway too.
So,
their
experience is different than ours, right? I mean, they're coming to terms with the universe and the creative force behind the universe and the existence of intelligence at all. They're coming to grips with that on through their experience, not ours. And yet it is the same journey.
Yes, except it's on, you know, their perspective. Yes, exactly. And, you know, they want to know some things. I remember trying to share some things with my guide as he wasn't able to understand some of the things I said or some of the ways I've stated things. And it was interesting because much of what they understand is very literal. Having any idea of something, I don't know, it's hard for them to picture things that they've never experienced.
Probably just as the same as it is for us.
Yeah.
By the way, folks, that was Station President Tony Kay in the studio. It's our... okay, enough of that. We do have quite a few emails, and we'll be getting to them shortly. Listeners, you can send yours in to dj@artistfirst.com, and we'll read them later on in the broadcast. Anything happened since the last broadcast that brings you some concern or perhaps peace of mind?
Actually, the concern remains as a global stability, our planet there, more than just weather, extreme weather, you know, whether it be breaking hot temperatures or, you know, other temperatures going the other direction. There's the fact that we are getting, you know, earthquakes that haven't happened, and then more than volcanic activity that is continuing to show up. And this is something that was, again, showed to me that we will see some of these things, and they are happening. And the driving force, of course, was given to me in a kind of simplistic way. And basically boils down to our internal engine is actually revving up a little bit, and that's our planetary engine that has a lot to do with our magnetosphere and pole, you know, polarity, pole shifting, if anything, and the convection currents of thermal convection currents, is energetics that may have a lot to do with earthquakes and volcanic activity. So a lot of these engines are moving a little bit more than normal. And that may be a precursor to a pole shift.
I believe there was an earthquake in the last 24 hours somewhere in northern Italy, was it?
Yeah, well, that's, yes. And it killed people, too.
Of course, there's earthquakes every day. There's lots of them. Most we don't feel. Most are well deep down in the Earth's crust, but... You know, we hate to play conspiracy corner here, but data is data. You can't help turning on the television in the spring of 2012 and not be inundated with ancient alien programs, UFO encounters, unexplained mysteries. You know, is Hollywood taking advantage of the interest of the public? Perhaps they are. A couple things I saw that fascinated me over the weekend, Michael, were some reports out of the former Soviet Union that they had been actually fighting with UFOs, that they're for a period of time after World War II until, I don't know, I'm guessing maybe the 70s or 80s or even the early 90s, Russian fighter jets shot at, and in some cases they claimed downed UFO craft. Are we really smart in our little tiny speck of the universe when they can come to us and we can't get to them? Should we really be shooting at them?
It's yeah, I think that's a little bit of a kind of a bad way of saying hello, right?
Well,
it's one of the things that they realize about us is that we are driven by, you know, fear reactions. We are fearful people, and that is something that has to be essentially, you know, it's an important survival mechanism, but it's not in their level of society. They're you might say the heavenly society. Fear is not an important emotion or an motivator, but for our planet presently, fear is a tremendous motivator.
It's also a natural survival instinct.
Right.
Fearless people don't live very long. Well, in some cases, anyway.
Well, not necessarily, actually.
You know, I'm not afraid to jump off that cliff. Okay, Bob, you go do that. And we need another Bob.
Yeah, he opens his parachute on the way down.
One of the other things that that program I watched about the Russians and their collecting of UFO data over the years, someone, and again, this could be a bunch of hooey. I'm not saying that it isn't just outright bull feathers, but they claim American analysts put out some theory, as wacko as this might sound, that the Celestials retaliated, that they deliberately attacked several Russian bases. And in one instance, they recalled, there were three Russian rockets in the early days of that program in Russia, and they destroyed three of them on the launch pad simultaneously in a fuel dump in a base. Now, I mean, this should be front page news across the world. Humans attacked by aliens. You know, maybe they provoked it. You go up to a hornet's nest and you swat it with a stick, they might come out and get you. Any credence to that? I thought that was such now the aliens are actually fighting with the Soviets? Is that even possible?
Could very well be. There may have been, that appearance, the way they recorded it in terms of what may have happened, but it really amounts to the fact that global thermonuclear war was something that is a big no-no to and the aliens, you might say, the Celestials don't want it to happen.
Well, I think the program that immediately follows that talked about someone has put forth a theory that perhaps Leonardo da Vinci, there's 2 years in his life they can't account for historically. They think perhaps he was counseled by perhaps the same folks that counseled you, I don't mean literally, but from the same group, perhaps. And the leaps in intelligence and design and the explosion of knowledge from one individual, probably unparalleled in human history, probably the greatest genius so far of all human beings. You know, do you believe that there's any celestial connection between Leonardo da Vinci and the folks you know?
When it comes down to people like Leonardo da Vinci, Leonardo had a highly gifted sense of intelligence and ability, not only in his inventiveness and in creativeness, and, you know, his artwork and all of that. But when you look at it, you see a man who had attained mastery far beyond what would normally have been able to be done by anyone. The Celestials look at us as being able to attain that kind of mastery of what Leonardo could do if we were able to live long enough. If we had more time, we could do it. If we could live long enough, we could do it. So could Leonardo have had some extra help in learning and to, you know, to get his super talented mind and abilities trained with other ideals? Of course. Much of what we have today has been inspired. Tesla was, Tesla is another one who has given us the present modern age in terms of electricity and electronics and intelligent electronics. That is also inspired, and he was driven to produce it. And Leonardo also. So he may have, it seems, actually tried to relate that knowledge and experience, whether it be consciously or subconsciously, or, you know, underlying his regular conscious ability, and you could see it perhaps in a subconscious manner being brought through. And that's an interesting point, because I think when it came down to my having a, you know, essentially a veil of placed over a segment of my memory, I would always go and look at the Book of Revelation and focus on what the heck is going on in this new Jerusalem that comes down out of heaven as a bride adorned for the groom. What goes on there? I think I know it, but I don't know it. I kept saying, you know, and I used to think that a lot. And that now when I look at it, you know, I look at that, and it does not possess any of that mystery, because I really do know what goes on there. And, you know, it's a... Yeah, it's a government post, I guess. You might say celestial government post.
Yeah, it's the Nome, Alaska of the territory covered by... They're banished to the Siberia, which is this outer arm of this galaxy. Tony Kaye is just was still here in the station, and we were talking about Leonardo da Vinci. Perhaps Tony said he got the keys, somehow got into the Vatican Library, and did a bunch of research on ancient knowledge and civilization. Maybe there weren't any celestials at all. Maybe it's all there. I don't know. Hey, they just arrested the Pope's butler yesterday for malfeasance. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. Things are not good at the Vatican. But, you know, and just on that topic alone, I personally believe, there's a lot of knowledge that the Vatican has hidden. Case in point is the Dead Sea Scrolls. It took them 40 years to put out the first 100 documents because, you know, why? I don't know, but let's speculate for a minute. Maybe the teachings were different. Maybe the teachings were real different. And maybe that's the last thing they wanted to do was post to the world the most historically accurate documents we have concerning the Bible. Now, that's total speculation, but just throwing out there food for thought. What are your thoughts about that, Michael? Do the libraries at the Vatican contain hidden knowledge that would just turn the world on its head?
There is probably a tremendous amount that is in there, and a tremendous amount that really isn't understood. But because it isn't understood, they feel, of course, that it cannot be brought out because they can't understand it. So why should it be shared with the rest of the world? And then it gets forgotten because whoever was doing something on it died. And this is probably one of the reasons why it just remains hidden. And the Vatican at one time wanted to, you know, be the center post in all of the intellectual reality that humanity has, but of course it's been, you know, they're proven wrong quite, you know, a lot. So we may find soon that there'll be a lot of documents that may be unearthed that are there and have been forgotten or may be hidden. But I think a lot of it is just plain lost, forgotten about.
One other point about Leonardo before we move on. This program that put out this theory showed if you take certain paintings, I believe one is the Mona Lisa, several famous paintings of Leonardo da Vinci, and you, how do I describe this? If you take two images side by side, the exact same images, one on the left, one on the right, and you put them together, it's like holding a mirror up to half of the photograph. What results is a picture that looks a lot like an alien's face. And it's remarkable. Now, is this just a coincidence of the geometry that they use, you know, behind paintings and the techniques and stuff? But when you take these perfectly beautiful paintings and you look at only half of it and then take that half and lay it on the other half and put them together, they look like faces. Faces of aliens.
And exactly. I think I saw a little bit of that.
And not only that, but in this was an interesting program because the drawings from Leonardo's own books that are still around show these, what they people in the past have called these grotesque looking people. And they, if you weren't familiar with the celestial theory and the celestial things that are going on, you would just look at these almost like cartoonish figures. Yet Leonardo da Vinci was one of the most brilliant painters and anatomists. When he drew skeletons and musculature, I mean, it was flawless, almost like, you know, today's scans can do. So why would he do these? In other words, if maybe he actually saw these people. Maybe, and, you know, a lot of them had elongated skulls, just like what we hear about. A lot of them had large cranial skulls that they're not necessarily elongated, but just much larger than ours. And maybe they were the actual drawings of the people he met with. Your thoughts?
My thoughts is that, it could very well be. And they have some of these celestial beings, they're material and not material. In other words, they move in between dimensions. And they are able to make you forget. You may keep some feelings, which may be primal, essentially fear-based. But a lot of what the learning goes on can be placed in a sort of like a reserve capacity to be sort of retrieved. At a time which is you're not aware of, you're not sure how it was implanted, and I remember many legends of the Hawaiian people that talked about Menehune, who were kind of grotesque. They were very little, they were small, and they could do things that move things around and make rocks and things move around without any effort and create these fish ponds overnight. And one of the key things was you couldn't make eye contact with them. If you made eye contact with them, you're lost. You would essentially have no memory or something like that. But those that come back with the story say that they had made no eye contact and made themselves hidden. And those who did, probably with others, had trouble. So the ability for mind type of, perhaps not mind control, but mind kind of hypnotic or super hypnotic abilities over a human person, a human creature, and their knowledge of it is pretty high. I know Nancy Leader did say that they were able to put her in this catatonic state because they knew just how to do it without, any problem. And they would do that often to human beings. But at that, at that time in which they're prepared for whatever task that they have to do, this type of preparation or rehearsal or education many times goes to a point of being forgotten and then simply comes out of a person's life in their expression. Leonardo could have been one, and his expression is well appreciated, by humanity today.
I saw a guy, crepe, he's probably passed away now. He was called the Amazing Kreskin. I don't know if you listeners have ever heard of this guy. He would go around to different colleges. When I was in college, he would come to assembly of the college kids, and he would do demonstrations of hypnotics and mind reading. It was unbelievable what he could do, what he could make those students believe they think they were, or put them in any state he felt like it. And, you know, from some of the embarrassing things these kids did, I guarantee you they would never, never, never do these things in front of all of their college mates unless they were under some kind of spell. But one of the things that, so I guess what I'm saying is I've seen this right before my eyes, humans on humans. I mean, it's everybody's, you know, heard about things like this. The cool thing about Kreskin, his fee was out, you know, at that time was a lot of money. But he would tell the colleges that hire him, you can hide my paycheck anywhere in the building that I'm performing, and if I can tell you where it is, I get to take it with me. And so far, he was batting 100%. They stuck it in a fire hose, you know, like way over there in the other part of the building. They stuck it in the folds of the fire hose, and he knew where it was, you know. Now, do you think things like that are all setups? You know, most magicians are illusionists. They have people in on them. They have helpers. It's all an illusion. But that's kind of hard to, when you see that kind of thing going on, you know, was every one of those kids talked into making fools of themselves in front of their peers for money or something? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, there's those that have to be pre-selected by the hypnotist. They tend to be able to spot them right off. Just the way they behave. I'm a reject. You know, the hypnotist couldn't hypnotize me. But friends of mine were perfectly acceptable in such a hypnotic type of, you know, when a hypnotist comes and they just look for people. And I'm not sure what they look for, but they find those that are, you know, easily hypnotized. And I guess these hypnotists just know what to look for.
Well, I guess for someone that's never actually seen that, I mean, here you are, here we are, these crude, evolving humans here, and some of us humans, of those guys, they've already mastered that entire science.
Yeah,
yet imagine what beings millions of years more advanced than we can do already. Boy, that, you know, they can probably snap their fingers and you forget whatever you need to forget. Hey, wouldn't that be a great therapy for... I guess we do that now in our own crude way, don't we? We try to help people through traumatic points in their life, and we use some reliving. But it's not, you know, for a listener tuning in saying, oh, they control your mind. Well, duh. The Kreskin can. I've seen it with my own two eyes, so why can't some celestial being? Well, let's jump on if you're ready, Michael. Let's jump on to some emails.
Okay.
Here's news from the edge. It says, the subject line says, Fukushima radiation heading our way. And, oh, this is more of a statement. It says, Michael Obama smoked pot in Hawaii. I say, great. Good for him. I hope he learned from the experience and can understand what other people do. But, okay, what are your thoughts about that? Obama smoked pot in Hawaii.
I don't know. Maybe it was Maui, Waui.
That's the kind of stuff that...
That was for real. We really had stuff growing. That we called Maui Waui.
And it would turn you into an iguana like Stacy Keach in that Cheech and Chong movie. That's some good pot, man. All right, well, maybe we'll go to a few more serious questions here. There's three statements here. Dead Sea Scrolls, comma, John M. Allegro, and Sacred Mushrooms and the Cross. Okay, that's all it is. What's the connection there? Again, it's Dead Sea Scrolls, John M. Allegro, and then Sacred Mushrooms and the Cross. It's almost like a Jeopardy question.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys could be a little more specific.
Yeah, the different modalities in trying to find exactly what we were talking about in the opening of the show. And if you want to transition, you want to move into the dimension, you know, the island. The ancients, of course, called the planet, planet of the crossing. Cross goes beyond. And it's older than, you know, the crucifix. But the idea of the mushrooms and all of these other things is to basically straddle the mortal physical into the eternal spiritual. And have a, you know, real experience. Now, some of it may be in terms of mind, though. Others may be physical. You know, when you conquer fire, you can firewalk, and then, people can be taught to do that. And if they, you know, if they accomplish that, that's a dimensional reality. It's a growth process, and a bit of a taste of a greater reality ahead of us. It's sort of like a fish jumping out of water. You know, hey, there's more to this, you know, my world than this ocean. You know, there's stuff above it. You know.
Here's one from Chaka who writes, Michael, is there a place for, quote, human, I'm sorry, quote, virgin humans, unquote, on the mothership?
The concept of virgin human, was basically a genetic, genetically pure. Our genetics have, can have corruption in it, like any sequence of code. And genetic code goes through many changes over many generations, you know. But yet ours seems to be much more pure. But there are some of us who have big problems with our genetic code and essentially not pure, not a virgin, you might say. So the virginal or the pure coded genetics is what is, of course, anyone who is looking for seed, essentially, because what is important in terms of what I was able to experience is we have the procreative power. We are able to procreate. And some of these other guys have gone beyond procreation. They're basically created by higher technology and through, you know, various, I guess, laboratory schemes, and their physical bodies and what they use to motivate around. And that is something that is, was a big eye-opener for me to understand, and the direction of our technology today, kind of scares me. But in terms of what they look as pure genetics, you know, I don't think they would like any of ours, GMO, you know, genetically modified stuff.
Here's an email from TK who writes, transcending time and space in a spiritual state is the ultimate beginning at the end. At the end of our material state, excuse me. Let me read that again. Transcending time and space in a spirit state is the ultimate beginning at the end of our material state. Do celestials offer a alternate state of existence?
That's what I was talking about, basically this state in between. And this is essentially open to us as mortal beings, of physical or material, possessing material bodies in supposedly a material three-dimensional, four-dimensional space. But actually, it's more than that. And if we are able to exercise that, and there are certain gifts that have been implanted into our planetary reality, and they have common names, and the common name of the Holy Spirit is one of them. And these things have been absorbed into the cultures of the other world, practitioners of these transitional exercises, you know, moving into the spiritual realm while being a physical person and demonstrating some supernatural abilities, which are essentially natural ability if you have grown into a supernatural being, and that would be one in which has a type of a straddle between the normal physical and the spiritual. And this is a state of Marantia, and one in which there are different people who are able to express it different ways, and some, you know, identically, but it's achievable. And than real. So that's one of the things that I think, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of. Yet I think the church was deathly afraid of it and classifying it in the wrong terms. I would look at things like that as evil. In fact, much of what, you know, the church does, they have been looking at is UFOs are evil. Yeah, UFO celestial beings are evil. Yet they classify many of them as angels. And then they say, well, if they're angels, they're different, you know. Heck, they come out of the same flying saucer. And they may essentially look like the same kind of being of light, clothed in a type of marantia, or ability to be physical as well as spiritual at the same time. And then say to us, you're the same, and you can do what we do if you practice it. And that is something that is, looked on by the controllers as being scary. If they have a whole new type of people who are not afraid anymore.
In the 16th century, in Europe anyway, the dominant governmental force was the Catholic Church. And much of the artwork that has survived today from Europe was commissioned by the church and for the church. So why do you think in the 16th century there was such an explosion, literally, of paintings with what we would just call UFOs in the background? Now, come on, here's you know, a picture of the Madonna and the baby, and in the background there's a UFO and a guy looking up at it way in the back. You know, I mean, there's just no question what they were intending to put in those paintings. You know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like it, folks, they're UFOs. Well, how the hell did they get into all these 16th century masterpieces? Do you believe that during that period of time, of course, was the period of Leonardo da Vinci, do you think maybe the celestial says, well, hey, you know, we've been around here for a while. It's the 16th century. Why don't we start paying these guys some closer visits? Why don't we start giving them some ideas, like maybe how to cure some diseases or how to farm better? You know, do you think they ever get in there and dabble from time to time to kind of speed things along?
Of course. It's one of the things that they have promised to give. I mean, you can find it even in biblically the Bible is gifts of the Spirit, gifts of knowledge. And these are the things that are to be practiced, because not to be in tune with the celestial mind, this is let the mind, you know, of, you know, Christ be also in you. And that mind is shared, and it's a type of shared celestial consciousness, and it's just and mind, and that's how much of a progress has gone beyond the base, or, you know, the animal. You know, it could have been just being hunter and gatherer, never ascend beyond that.
Hey, wait a minute, I'm putting some pieces together here. They wouldn't have put those UFOs in all those paintings if they weren't there, right? You wouldn't put a horse in the sky either, because the horse wasn't there. So they put these things because they were there. So if they were there, let's just play along for a minute here. Very little went on that the Catholic Church was not directly involved with or either approved or disapproved of. And, okay, let's say the Celestials did come out in force. They were known a lot, you know, maybe that period of time they were seen in the skies. And maybe they met with the leadership of the Roman Catholic Church back then. And maybe the Roman Catholic Church was given secrets about when they were coming back. Now, why would that matter? Well, There's a gentleman named, he's long deceased, named Malachi. Is it Malachi? Malachi. The considered an authentic prophet by the Catholic Church, who has named the names of every pope that there will ever be. And there's an ending date, an ending name. I think it's the next one, isn't it, Michael? The church says,
yes,
this guy it was legit. Now, how would that guy know? Well, if they were told back in the 16th century that, hey, sometime around 2012, 20-something, their son's going to do this and we're going to need to change everything, then maybe the church has always known when the end date was, even way back then. And because if you would come forward, if the church would come forward and say, in the 1600s, and say, hey, guess what? Everything's going to change in 2012. So, this is just a holding pattern between now and then everything's going to change. It would be hard to control people if they didn't have that fear of burning in hell for all eternity if they knew the game was perhaps might change somewhere down the road, they may not have been able to keep such control. Okay, that was my convoluted and crazy stringing of probably disassociated facts. What do you think?
Well, actually, that's not very far off from reality, because if they were, you know, on the opposite end, you know, using instead of the draw of truth, instead of the you know, instead of the draw, they're pushing out a type of control. Of course, it's going to be one which uses various different types of manipulative techniques, and that's exactly opposite to what the truth is, as far as I was able to gather from the celestials themselves. And one in which truth is a drawing factor. It's like, you know, being drawn to the light, you know, and drawn to the, you know, ferrous material, being drawn to the magnet. It's that truth which is the highest. Yet because of wanting to contend with the idea that the truth that they had was the highest, they had to use various techniques to try to motivate people who basically, many of them were illiterate. They didn't understand. They just knew what the people who supposedly were smart knew, you know.
And they also knew that if you disobeyed the church, they might just burn you at the stake alive.
Yeah.
You see that happen a couple times in your town square.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing what they tell you to do. What a wonderful way to run a church. Hey, if you don't believe what we believe, we're going to kill you brutally in front of your friends and family. What a way to do business, people. And I'm a Catholic. I'm a pissed off Catholic. I think the entire hierarchy of the Catholic Church should immediately, today, resign and pray to God they don't burn in hell for all eternity for all the stuff they've been doing. Let's replace them with responsible leadership. You can send hate mail to dj@artistfirst.com. Michael, as always, we're coming close to the top of the hour. We've sort of covered a lot of diverse topics on the broadcast, but okay, so for the couple of minutes we have left, let me just pose you the following question. We were just talking about, you know, and Westerners, we know all about, or, you know, we look at the history of Europe, and we think that that's the only history of the planet. You know, in the 1600s, there was a whole rest of the world. You know, you got all of Asia, you got all of North America, South America. Those are giant civilizations that are operating at the same time. And I wonder if during that period of time around the 1600s, if those other cultures, you know, the folks in South America and the folks in North America, those the Indian tribes, what would that be, the Mayans back then?
Right.
I wonder if they had the same increased activity during that period of time that perhaps these Renaissance paintings reflect.
Of course. It you can find it in Asia, too, at the same period of time.
And the archaeological record shows that, then. I mean, they're paintings.
And some of the traditions also show that. You know, one of the interesting things was I went to a very old village. They had kind of preserved in Japan, you know, like, the, oh, this is like, you know, going back to that, you know, that period, like in the 1600s. And they showed how they cultivated rice and things like that. And there was one unusual rice patch which wasn't rectangular. It was circular. And the rice was planted in a circular spiral, just like a landing pad of, you know, a crop circle. Except they called this one the rice patch for the god, the gods, plural perhaps, and kami, rice patch. And that tells me that they landed. And it's got the landing was so significant in helping the culture come out of this terrible time. Actually, it was a pretty bad time. It was, I think, you know, as far as conditions of life, they were producing crop. There were crop failures and other things. So they needed some help, so they might have had some technical help.
Well, sometimes I think we humans can fall into the myth that, oh boy, if I was just transported to 1,000 years ago, I'd be the smartest person on the planet because I know all about these technologies and things that they didn't know about. Oh, yeah, how'd they build the pyramids? Okay, here we are. You know, how'd they move those? In many of these places around the world, the stones that they mixed and they moved were bigger than any equipment we have that can move it. Yeah, so we have this arrogance that because we're the current generation, that perhaps every generation before us was somehow less intelligent than we are, and I think that's a big mistake to make. Our ancestors were every bit as bright as we are. They worked on different principles, and maybe they actually didn't have to worry about arguing whether there was UFOs in the skies because they knew they were there. They talked to them. They interacted with them like the pharaohs and so on and so forth. I just wonder.
Yeah, that's true, because even in Hawaii, there are certain areas which are considered kind of sacred, essentially, but they have evidences that it seems to have had contact, you know, in those areas, and there seems to be some legacy activity there, you know, some paranormal type of activity. So it remains sort of heightened in terms of what goes on over there. I've been to some of those places, and I would just classify them, yeah, they're spooky places.
Well, folks, this hour always goes by too fast during the week for me. I wish we had 2 hours, but we're at the top of the hour, and I want to make sure I save time to say the following words on every broadcast. Michael does this show because he told his celestial friends that he would. He's merely fulfilling his word. He does not get paid to do this broadcast. He has nothing to sell. We put this information out, Artist First does, to let you make up your own minds. Remember, it's all about free will. Think about it. Think what you think is the truth and follow that. We simply put it out there for your digestion and understanding, I guess. I don't know. But, Michael, sincerely, on behalf of the entire staff at Artist First and all our listeners, I sincerely thank you for each and every broadcast you spend with us.
Sure. You're welcome, and it's a blessing for me to be able to fulfill the will, partially at least, of the celestials who looked at me actually with kind of a sadness and a hope that I would be an agent for them, and I said, oh, okay, I will. I'll help whatever way I can.
Oh, they used a guilt trip on you?
Well, sort of. They just looked,
hey, it works.
It worked, yeah.
Oh, like a little puppy dog. Well, very good. Hey, CBS News is about a minute late. The Artie Kornfeld Show follows the CBS News. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next week. Michael, take care.
You're welcome. Aloha.